Splendid. Absolutely amazing. ABBA have arrived on Twitter. That's very exciting, isn't it, Anna Lewis?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I see that you were taking a photograph of that Orwellian construction called Senate House, which was just around the corner from the Institute of Higher Education back in the day, which you were performing at. So that's also equally exciting. And it's fair to say that from the listener's point of view, last week, of course, very worried about yourself and your son, who were in accident and emergency for hours upon hours upon hours. Did the advice that you got from the Midwick Drive actually help, Anna?
Well, I escaped a little later, and because I had to go to an appointment myself in Brentford, so I had to leave him, and he didn't get seen till 7:30 that evening.
Wow.
So it was quite a wait, but now he's over it, and they gave him the right medication and everything.
Excellent. It's all great. Ben, she didn't hear that because I didn't have your microphone live, because I hadn't formally introduced you yet. You know, it's kind of...
Sorry.
Up about 3 o'clock. At three o'clock we were at the hospital and he didn't leave till 7:30.
One half English hours. Yeah. Spent with just one Midwick Drive telephone link to communicate. It's just, frankly, amazing. But still, you went through the whole thing. It worked. That's the important system. In the studio, we have the return to the Midwick Drive of Rory McGowan. How are you, Rory?
I'm doing quite well, Alex. Thank you.
Just quite well.
Oh, you know.
Okay. Rory, who's going to attempt to do a Ben Lewis, as we say. He's going to actually look to do the evening midweek drive and the morning edition between 8 a.m. and 9:40 tomorrow morning.
It's a risky line of work that you're going to jump into.
Commitment to the cruise
slope from here on in.
Is what it's called.
I know. Even you, Anna, have never actually done the two whammies from that sort of point of view. And that's after years and years of psyching yourself up on the whole thing. Amazing. We've also got the welcome return of Eva McDonald. How are you, Eva?
Hello. I'm fine, thank you.
Singer, songwriter, general all-round wonderful person. And with a new hairstyle as well.
Yes, I know. I'm rocking this Facebook
look today. Works. Headphones and... How would you differ? I mean, are they bangs? No, they're not bangs. I don't know.
They are. I think they're called space buns.
Space buns.
Sci-fi, Alex. You would love that.
I know, very sci-fi.
It's like Princess Leia, but more fun, really.
She's going with the narrative.
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant.
Or Minnie Mouse.
It's interesting.
I call them space buns.
I mean, Anna, have you ever felt the need to maybe go for space buns or a Minnie Mouse with respect to hairstyles?
Colour is my thing. I'm willing to give any colour a try, but I wouldn't keep it for too long. But styles, I'm a bit traditional myself. I'm a bit boring. Sorry.
C.A. Asprey, have you encountered her? Her name is Christine Asprey, lived and worked all over the world in the police service, civil service, private industry, etc. She's an author who's very much in favour of fighting, quite literally fighting the outdated gender stereotypes in which women are portrayed as submissive, two-dimensional eye candy in fiction today. When women are given more masculine traits such as physical strength or an interest in sex, they are typically portrayed as promiscuous and baddies. According to C.A. Asprey, we'll be speaking to her later on in the programme, and these are actually mirroring the findings of academics from the universities of Illinois and California, who used an algorithm to examine 104,000 works of fiction dating from 1780 to 2007, when it expects to find an increase in the prominence of female characters, possibly wearing space buns, or not, as the case may be, but no, there's a steady decline that's been seen in terms of female characters in literature across the two centuries. Anna, are you shocked by this finding, or is it a case of, sea sisters, I told you, we were being oppressed?
Well, it's a funny thing you should say that. I mean, books are aside, but one of the things I noticed about the brilliant film Dunkirk was the lack of women in the cast.
Mm.
And it's interesting. I mean, I know it's a bloke type of film, isn't it, let's be honest. I mean, some women will. But in terms of books, I think that... I'd like to sort of pass on this. I think women are, in a way, if the author's reflecting what society is all about, then maybe they've got a point. Maybe women are, you know, undervalued and under sort of represented. If that's what they're doing, reflecting life. And if they want to big up women, then that's true fiction.
In addition to that, Anna, I would also draw attention to the fact that I was stating last year, to the chagrin, it must be said, the chagrin of Richard Fitzwilliams, when I said that this was the reason why Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk for me was inferior to the Richard Attenborough Dunkirk, where at least you had women characters featured fully throughout the whole thing, and that was in the 1950s, 1958, and up to the 2000s. Shocking. Unbelievable. Ben, I know that you're equally shocked on behalf of the women of the world.
Indeed, despite being a bloke.
We can still share at least half the chromosomal links from that point of view.
Oh, yeah, that's very true.
At least share on that system. It's very important. Anyway, Rory, any thoughts from yourself?
I just want to point out that I love Dunkirk, actually, as a film. I went to see it last year, and I thought it was very good. But it is certainly a problem. No, it exists throughout, and as somebody who's, you know, doing creative writing and has read a fair few books, I can say that, you know, representation for women is a problem that, you know, needs to be tackled.
Mm. Well, we say so, and that's why we asked Phil Hurdwood to specifically say...
Singer, scholar, festival ambassador, and midweek drivette. It's Eva McDonald on the Midweek Drive.
It is,
yeah, quite frankly, because Eva, in the absence of Bethany Gulliver, she's got a long meeting with her dissertation tutor, and Chloe Rose, she's busy actually in other parts of the country, I know. She's coming back for a Christmas special in a couple of weeks' time.
So oh, good.
Yeah, exactly. You are flying the flag from that point of view, and that's why you, Eva McDonald, must ask Anna Lewis those last two questions, please.
I will. Anna, have you had an interesting telephonic link
I
with
have.
Us?
I have. I've learned a lot today. Thank you.
It's good. It's always a good tip. And will you be joining us again soon?
Yes, we'll be delighted. Thanks.
Fantastic.
That's splendid. Cheers. Good stuff. Up next, William Coles. Let's stay together. It is Siren Radio on the Midweek Drive, and that's always exciting, isn't it? William Coles in Edinburgh.
Yes, very, very exciting, Alex.
William, we're heading up to a piece about gender inequality, which, according to writer C.A. or Asprey, is as bad as ever when it comes to the balance thing from that point of view. And indeed, over the last 200 years, apparently, the prominence of female characters in literature has seen a steady decline. Readers must also change their expectations of female authors, who, Asprey claims, are often expected to write slushy or romantic tomes.
All right, OK, well, good luck with that one. Sounds riveting.
Honestly, sometimes. You're preparing for, of course, the appropriately named Storm Diana, which is battering the West Coast now. Surely on the East Coast, you're going to be OK with that. It's not going to be too bad at all, is it?
No, we're just getting the hors d'oeuvre at the moment. It's all going to kick in. It's pretty wet and it's pretty windy. The storm starts tomorrow proper, but it's just a warm-up act today.
But isn't there something wonderful in an era where global warming is taken seriously across the planet that we can actually look forward to wet and windy conditions across the planet? Doesn't it kind of just make you sort of just stand up and be proud for the whole thing, really?
Yeah, exactly. And wouldn't it be great if we could get forest fires here as well? But unfortunately, that's unlikely.
Oh, I don't know. Yorkshire has had a fair number over the last few years, and the Yorkshire moors and various other things. So anything's possible if you just conceive it. In the studio, we have conceived of the delightful Eva McDonald with fantastic new hairstyle. Don't worry, I'll be taking photographs so you can actually like it and feel free to do so and share it in all sorts of ways. whether it's Princess Leia or Minnie Mouse, how did you redefine the buns?
I don't really know. I think it's more Princess Leia.
More Princess Leia. Mm. A kind of, yeah, but, yeah, Princess, what would you say, Rory?
I'd say almost Princess Leia. It's like Princess Leia, but, like, slightly moved up ahead.
Yeah.
Just the girl's hairstyle.
Yeah.
That's what I see.
I'd probably have to agree with that.
Just a girl's hairstyle.
That's it, just the hair, that's all it is to me.
Maybe it's just hair envy from my own point of view. I gave up the whole hairstyle a long time ago, but we can tell. What's wrong with the voyage? But no, I mean, frankly, I think that the Desmond Morris, or indeed Bobby Charlton comb over, is vastly, vastly underrated. I'm sure you'd agree, William. Yeah, you see, you weren't expecting that at 14 minutes past 5 o'clock on Siren Radio, were you? No.
Right, to be talking about the comb-over. Well, I don't know, maybe it's time for something new, Alex. Why don't we just get the trimmers out, and I'm sure that one of your lovelies would love to shave it all off for you.
No, I don't go full Jean-Luc Picard, not at this particular time. No. Anyway, who would you like to speak to, William? Because as ever, we need to put that question to you. You've got three fabulous folk. By the way, we say, get well, Kira. We also say, hopefully Bethany's well from that point of view. And who do you wish to speak to? Is it going to be...
I might speak to Ava about Leia's buns.
Hello.
Ava, so have you actually watched Star Wars? Do you know anything about Leia, or is it all Greek to you?
Do you know what? I never watched Star Wars until about 2 weeks ago. I was just with a friend, and I just randomly watched Star Wars, and it was actually all right.
So Leia was actually the inspiration for your current hairstyle?
I wasn't really thinking of her when I made this hairstyle, but she could be.
Okay, so which is going to be the next Star Wars character? One of the, the big bear kind of guy. What's he called?
Chewbacca.
Chewbacca.
A Wookiee.
Chewbacca, yes.
Yes.
It could be. I don't know, but
it's difficult to find out what Chewbacca's really saying, because once you're back, you're going, anybody else? Thank you.
That was very good.
That
was shocking.
on cue, obviously.
I'm going to ask you to ask William Coles those last two questions in Chewbacca
ease. I'd rather not.
Can you do R2-D2 as well?
No.
That's very good, actually.
I feel like you practice it, Alex.
No.
I did the voiceover man last week.
But I've not fallen for this because I've been here long enough now to know that you shouldn't do that because that's bait to Alex, that is.
It is bait to Alex. No. Do not do
that'll end up becoming some sort of voiceover
I clip it out and use it for unfortunately. Who knows? Obviously, when we talked about shark's teeth, yes, we haven't forgotten William.
William Coles, romantic novelist, political journalist, and regular midweek drive correspondent from the capital of Scotland. With or without his prehistoric shark's teeth.
And are they with the... you're always with, actually. I think we've already established that fact. So, do the children get very excitable, William, when it's a storm, because I've heard say over the years that when it's a stormy weather outside, that children somehow get a bit like little animals. They get all sort of antsy about the whole thing. How are the offspring in the Coles household?
We get quite a lot of rain and storms in Scotland, so it's not actually a big deal up here. No, they would be they'd be getting excited every other week if that were the case. No, they're all just, here we go, it's another storm. Time to get the kite out and go flying.
Well, I can go with that. That's important. Ben, anything you want to put to William? Given that his namesake, William Sitwell, fingers crossed, will be back on the programme tomorrow morning.
He will indeed.
Well, I said, his media rehabilitation started with The Warner Show. I actually feel that's the training ground for the Midweek Drive, either evening or morning edition.
Firstly, I think we should have been prioritised over The Warner Show.
No, I see that as much. They're the apprentice line things, etc. If they can cut it on The Warner Show, we might consider inviting them on this one.
That's very true. I didn't think of it like that way. But, it'd be good to hear from him again tomorrow. It's been a little while.
Well, he's had vegan challenges.
Indeed. But, William, what's in store for the rest of the week for you?
Yes.
What is in store for the rest of the week? I'm just writing. Writing is incredibly boring. There isn't much to say about it. You just go off to the pit face, you hew out your 2,000 words, and then that's done. You can have some exercise as well, but it's not very exciting to tell people about. What are you doing? Oh, I'm just writing. I sit at my laptop and tap away. Yes.
And do you do it in different places at all? Is there any, like a cafe, or do you go to some sort of library?
I've got a number of cafes that I go to, and the Museum of Scotland. But the main thing is, I've got to go to places where no one will know me, because otherwise, friends or acquaintances come along, they say, oh, how lovely to see you. And that's an hour gone, I have a copy of the rest of it. Because I'm not quite hard-hearted enough to tell them to sling their hook. I'm busy.
Is it a bit of a chore to keep on top of, though? Do you feel like you kind of have to force it out of you every day? Because there must be some days that it's really easy to get writing and get into it.
You make it sound like some kind of digestive disease, though.
I'm relating to my dissertation at this moment in time, if I'm honest. You have good days where you can write a lot and you leave it on a good note, and there's days where you really struggle with
brain's gone.
Getting there out.
Absolutely, yeah. Sometimes the muse is there, and sometimes it's all rather hard graft. And yes, you chug it out, and you look at it at the end of the day and think it's dross. Anyway, you keep on at it.
Thank you.
It's a very valuable insight into the mind of a creator from that point of view. Funny enough, I'm actually thinking about whether we can meet William Coles halfway here. Possibly with Rachel Teat, who joins us from a tap dancing studio in the second part of the programme. Mind tap dancing in the background? I said, Rachel, for yourself, we'll do whatever. In terms of that sequence, I'm thinking maybe we might actually make our way to Annick.
We like Annick.
There's
a big bookshop there.
Exactly.
And a poison garden. And you can get Harry Potter flying lessons.
Exactly. So I'm thinking that might be a useful location report for Star Wars hairstyle people to actually get together and work on that basis. Anyway, that's in the things to come category. Would you like to put those last two questions to William Coles, please? Eva.
I will indeed. William, have you had an interesting telephonic link with us?
Yes, I have. Thank you so much for asking, Ava.
You're welcome. And will we be hearing again from you soon?
Yes, just as soon as the boss asks me. Thank you so much for asking.
And just to clarify things, because obviously William has a propensity for saying Ava. I've always thought it's Eva. Is it Ava or Eva? Is it Wally? Eva!
It is Eva, originally, but I've also been known to be Ava. Eve,
Evangelina,
Evelyn.
Evelyn. Wow.
The name can vary, but my birth name is Eva.
I hope that's clarified things then. William.
Yeah. Okay. I was going all Nazi on you.
I did think so. I just wanted to actually say, look, much as we appreciate Frau Braun in her time, or Fraulein Braun, we don't really necessarily want to go quite down that routine, even though Siren Radio has been likened to hunkering down in a bunker.
I was lost on a winding road. I thought that life had nothing left to give. And you came and showed me that just to live was the greatest gift of all. And you showed me life is a
just to think that we were living to die. You came along and I was no longer alone, and you led me to the light, and you showed me
And so we should celebrate life, the kids from Fame, back in the 20th century. C.A. Asbury's books turn the idea of the helpless damsel in distress on its head. Asbury has based her stories on real people and real events and created highly believable three-dimensional characters that readers can't help but warm to. C.A. Asbury, of course, author of Mysteries, Romance and Enigmatologist. It's the enigmatologist that impresses me. C.A. Asbury, Christine, welcome to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good evening.
Excellent. Delighted to speak with you, good self. Now, we've already been sharing your views with a few of our contributors so far up in Edinburgh and indeed London. And yes. I think it's fair to say that we were quite shocked by the findings that have come out from this, particularly the two-century-year-old study, which reveals that actually we may be going backwards when it comes to real, fully-fledged, fully-rounded female characters and maybe heading into an era of stereotypes, both male and female.
It would appear so. At the present, it would certainly appear that we are. However, what's heartening from all of this is that the real breakthrough figures, the ones who move from, if you like, mass appeal books and become turn into book, Netflix series, movies, the rest, those are the really strong female characters. If you think of like even the women in Outlander, the Hunger Games, there are so many strong female characters out there, and those are the ones that are really catching the public imagination. What I'm asking is for the publishing industry to try and catch up with that.
Which, again, you might have thought that in many ways with the notion of the inspiration leading to the whole development of things, it would have already done so. Now, we've got three fine young adults in the studio. Christine, who I'm sure we'll have one or two things to actually say. We've got one fine year graduate, one undergraduate, and one soul who's been entertaining all sorts of other routines, a singer and all various other matter of things. We've got Rory McGowan, first of all. Rory, have you noticed, as a male, that there's kind of gender inequality, that sort of things of positive role models has kind of been changed around from your own perspective?
I just want to preface this with, obviously, maybe the problem is not as evident to me, given that I am, you know,
a member of masculine gender,
who, you know, kind of gets that representation. However, as I said earlier on the show, I've, you know, read a lot of books, and with that comes the notice of, okay, well, I'm reading this, and I have noticed that this female character is often defined by a man. And what's the test called, Alex? The one where it's two female
characters. The Bechdel test.
The Bechdel test, yes. A surprising amount of books still fail that. And I don't think there's really any excuse for it.
Although that's something referring to film plays and film screens. I mean, the Bechdel test, Christine, in which as far as basically, if you have two women characters talking together, they need to be talking about something that isn't a man. Because if they're talking about a man,
I'm familiar with that. My characters do pass that, actually.
I would hope so. I would hope so, Christine. But yeah, that's an interesting line. Eva, as somebody who was saying, like the new hairstyle to Princess Leia, fantastic. Who with her whole routine? What are your thoughts on this issue?
Well, I think like the gender equality thing. I think it is. It's kind of a bit of an issue, but there are things where, you know, men are more not looked upon in books and things, but it's like Rory was saying, with there are more role, it's really hard to put, but more
positive role models for
more
men.
Role models for men, and it is a bit of an issue in books. I know there is that Black Tail.
Bechdel test, yep, yeah,
there
exactly.
Go. Just, the words escaping
but
my mouth.
A lot of people have difficulty with respect to that. And here am I, see as a male, finishing your sentences. I'm sorry, it's just not good.
I forgot the term. I can't remember what the term's called, that's why. But, yeah.
Did you notice it growing up, though, that actually, I mean, we've cited The Hunger Games there, which is a great sort of example of Jennifer Lawrence's kick-ass character. We've got a lot of Marvel Comics characters have been changing from that point of view, Jennifer Jones and so on.
A little bit, like... You know how men, like, when you say something or you think of something, you automatically either do think of a woman or do think of a man? So I always noticed that growing up, yeah, definitely. But it's becoming less of an issue now.
I mean, arguably, Christine, the furore, and I use the term deliberately, over the recent casting of Jodie Whittaker as a certain Time Lord, time traveller and so on, in Doctor Who, hadn't we not gone beyond those kind of things? And surely in a science fiction sort of story, you should be willing to work through that. I mean, I go back to the 1960s, Diana Rigg and Linda Thorson, Honor Blackman, etc., playing very dynamic female characters, and yet the kind of line was that even in an era where feminism and equality was being argued for on an ideological basis, this was kind of perceived as a fantasy output, and maybe we still haven't progressed from that.
Well, I think there's two issues. There are two levels. First of all, there's acceptance, like just getting in at all. And then there's generally being totally equal once you're in. I think we've reached the level of, we're just getting to the level of proper acceptance, where women are accepted in just about any job, where the true equality is not something we've actually reached yet. I'll give it the example. My books are based on real female detectives, the first professional female detectives in the world. They started in 1856 for the Pinkerton Detective Agency. They were the forerunners of the FBI. They were spies. They did forensics. They were acted as armed guard for the president. They did everything the men did, and they did it to a hugely high standard. They are all but forgotten. My character is actually based on one of those actually doing that work. When I presented that book to a publisher in the UK, as opposed to doing it as a series as what I've written, I presented them with a series of books. And bear in mind, I'm also an ex-police officer, researched the forensic intimately. I was then asked to turn that book into that series into one book, and to make it a love story. I genuinely cannot imagine a male detective having written a series of books that are intimately researched based on real characters and real crimes being asked to turn his male character into a love story. And that's really how I got into all of this.
That's extraordinary. Yeah, we have another crime writer called Jenny Finch who's been writing about the character Alex Hastings. It's a quadrilogy of books. And I think she would have gone completely ballistic if that was the case. It does seem most peculiar in all sorts of ways. Ben, can I bring you in as well on this one, Ben Lewis?
Yeah. Now, I find it quite interesting. Is it a case of the publishers don't want to do it, or is it because they feel it's dangerous territory? If they want to stick with the same recipe of trying to make book sales, that's what they feel is successful. Is it a case of they're acting as a business as opposed to acting based on what they feel is right or wrong to release?
Yeah. I would agree with you completely there. That's been my contention all through this, is that there are too many publishers playing safe, and they are looking for the same thing as they've always got. I mean, my husband's a musician, and he's also had that problem throughout his career, is that some type of music becomes breakthrough, and that's all the record companies want to commission, is other versions of that.
and they keep wanting to copy it, because they are a business, and I understand that. But there is a resistance to anything that's breakthrough and unusual. And my books are unusual in the setting, as in Victorian murder mysteries aren't usually set in the USA, and they're not usually set in even in the Old West. But these are proper murder mysteries. The setting is unusual. The characters are unusual. And that's what met with resistance. I was also told they wouldn't sell, but I found a publisher in the USA, and they sold more in the first quarter than the average book sells in its lifetime. So everything I was told was wrong, but it was based around a business decision, based around not only what is already selling, but that there was also a perception that it was a woman wrote it, so women would want to read it, and women want to read romance. And that's really what I'm trying to raise as an issue, that's not true. That simply isn't true. Women will read romance. There's nothing wrong with reading romance. But there is... Women read everything. Women read right across the sphere. And we shouldn't be restricting an output from a female writer to channel them so narrowly.
Absolutely. Interesting enough, in terms of that, congratulations to Fiona Moore, a regular correspondent with us, who's just had one of her short stories published. You might like this one, Christine. It's a story that's been published in the recent edition of Interzone magazine, all about giant ants and Donald Trump.
Oh.
I'll run that in there. The Pinkertons, of course. There was a wonderful TV series. I think it lasted one season, which focused on the Pinkerton detective agency and so on. So again, I think, and let's not forget Joss Whedon, who clearly kind of turned the whole stereotype, arguably together with Jane Espenson, upside down with Buffy the Vampire Slayer as well.
Yeah.
So you know, again, if you actually said there's no market for a blonde vampire slayer, it's not going to work at all. I think in terms of updating it, they're changing that. Is it just a case of rather like when we deal with actors and the acting profession, one of the regular lines is the unimaginativeness of casting directors, that here we have a situation, Christine, of quite frankly, it's the unimaginativeness of potential publishers.
There is that, but I think it's more than that. As I say, I genuinely cannot believe that if this character had been written as a male character, that anyone would have asked them to turn it into a love story or reduce it down to one book.
And it's interesting, the report also finds that female authors tend to be paid less than male authors, presumably with J.K. Rowling as an exception to that, also less likely to be nominated for and win literary prizes. So
yes.
Issues there that need to be addressed in terms of how things are going. And, of course, we do go... I mean, I use J.K. Rowling. That's one of the reasons why it's C.A. Asbury, presumably.
Yes, absolutely. I do have male readers. I've got about a third of them, I'd say... About a third of my readership's male. That's based on the reviews and the people who contact me. Of course, I don't know exactly who's buying the books, but I'd say about a third of my readership's male.
I think,
and they thoroughly enjoy them.
Yeah, and P.D. James never had any difficulties with her sort of range as well. And I know when I was fortunate enough to chat with her a few years ago, she was very much of the same belief, which is why I got surprised that we're still in this line, as you said, of having modern fiction portraying women as submissive two-dimensional eye candy, which is it's not great. And again, we would have thought in the 21st century we might have actually gone beyond that.
Yeah, and if we don't talk about it, it's not going to change.
Well, we'll be speaking with Murder, She Wrote producer Arthur Weingarten, who clearly, in the case of Angela Lansbury's character, I think would be quite appalled to actually see some of those sort of things in the second part of the programme. Eva, any other questions you want to put to Christine about what she's been talking about today and the way forward?
Well, the way forward, really, I was... just going to ask, do you have any other projects and any projects that you're going to be working on in the future, books-wise, that touch on gender equality or not for the moment?
Yes, well, I do. I've currently got three books out based on this character, and it's as far as I can see, it's the first time a female historical detective has been a professional, not an amateur, and she's no sidekick. She's not a sidekick to a male detective or to anyone else. She is the lead detective, which is a first as far as I can find. I look forward to being corrected on that, because the more the merrier. We're not in competition over this. My next project is I've currently written book four of this series. They're all standalone whodunits. I'm started book five, and my next project, which I've plotted, is a gothic whodunit set in Edinburgh, and it does relate to female equality again, and is to, based upon the way the law in Scotland impacted on females' rights, legal rights, and on the basis that they call it femme couveur, but the fact that women weren't allowed to own property, didn't have the ability to be equal under the law. They were owned by whatever male was the head of their family, be it their husband, their father, their elder brother, whatever.
The Innocent Bystander series of detective novels, all featuring strong female characters, with, again, a way of addressing antiquated misogynistic attitudes. I've got to ask the question as well, Christine. Your time in the police force, was there any kind of connection with, clearly, Ashes to Ashes, Life on Mars, where clearly we were seeing, again, the differences and challenges that were put forward there, where in terms of the fictional setting, you know, times of the police were also changing. And if you're a woman, well, basically, you did desk work or various other sort of minor areas.
Well, actually, that was my era when I was in the police. And it's not true that, actually, the women did only work behind desks, whatever. If only that were true, I wouldn't have been injured, but women did work all over the place, and any female officers out there from that era will tell you, we did the same jobs as men. We were the first ones to do it, and we did get a lot of pushback from men who thought we were taking men's jobs. I would equally say that I had a lot of male colleagues I'm still friends with who were very supportive. So it was a curate's egg. It wasn't all bad. It does impact in my books, in as much as some of the most sexist things that are in the books are things that actually happened to me. However, I have cleaned up the language.
Well, I mean, again, this is and I'm pleased that we actually avoided any expletives on this live radio production. We knew we could count on you, Christine. It's all great stuff there. I have to ask the question, though. Enigmatologist. I mean, I love the sort of notion of that. Is that just somebody who loves enigmas? You like codes?
I love mysteries, and I love the obscure. I've always loved history, but one of the things I love in history are the obscure things that nobody teaches you and that people forget. I like to research, how did women manage their periods? Why were babies dressed as girls until they reached a certain age? All these little obscure points that are so obscure that you don't get into the history class, and I find absolutely fascinating.
Extraordinary. The Innocence Mystery Series, the Lady Pinkertons, the Gentleman Thieves, and a whole range of other wonderful things. You can access caasbury.com, that's caasbrey.com. Presumably you're also available on the usual social media, including at CAASBREAY, C Asbury, on Twitter as well.
I am on Twitter and Facebook, and I have my own website. I can be contacted through there as well, CAASBRE.com.
Christine, it's been wonderful connecting with your good self today. Hopefully we'll speak again soon and see the continued progress of life, the universe, and representatives of human beings as not necessarily stereotypical, but maybe well-rounded individuals in our own right, perhaps.
Thank you, and it's been lovely speaking to you and to your other contributors as well.
Round of applause for CA Asprey, please. What a great adventure film that was. Never Ending Story, probably. Did you ever see Never Ending Story?
No, but the song ended, so I imagine there was an ending to it.
It's a never ending story. Lee Mild sang the song. Never Ending Story, Rory?
No.
No.
Never.
What?
Sorry,
what,
Alex.
What are distribution devices like Amazon and Netflix doing if you can't access Never Ending Story? Look it up now. Use your devices. Honestly, you're talking about the way the media is influenced. Well, I can't, Eva, Never Ending Story.
Do you know, I did actually watch it.
Yes.
Even though it says a story.
Yes.
I did actually watch it when I was younger.
Yes.
I thought it was really sad.
It was, actually. Yeah. It was quite heartrending. Particularly well, it's just so full of deep emotional moments.
I can't remember it exactly. But I just remember it being really sad.
Mm, yeah. And of course, there's Never Ending Story 2, the sequel.
Thank you for reminding me of it. Yeah,
Never Ending Story 1 and Never Ending Story 2. It is just amazingly awesome. The news does actually come to an end, but it hasn't even begun yet, so we'll talk our way through that. We've also got Arthur Weingarten. As we said, hopefully we've got the timings right this week. He will be with us after the news from the Sky News Centre, especially as we actually say, it's not from the Sky, it's from the Siren News Centre. chase these dreams. We all are creatures of dreams in so many ways. In fact, it's the dreams that kind of give life meaning and allow the wordsmiths of the world to churn out material like this.
Time now for some more Weingarten wonderment on the Midweek Drive.
Yes, and not just a voicemail. How are you, Arthur?
I'm well, thank you, Alex. I'm well.
Excellent. Obviously, there's the lights of San Diego. I do like the notion that one of our contributors, Fiona Moore, has just had a short story published in which she deals with giant ants and Donald Trump. I know. In the same narrative. Just goes to show it's a whole new world. And for once, we've actually... We've got an all-male lineup for you, Arthur, because Eva MacDonald has had to head off and vacate the studio, leaving Ben Lewis and Rory McGowan in the studio. And we've already talked about gender balance with author C.A. Asprey, who apparently came up with a study that even after 200 years, Arthur, it seems that women are still given the brown end of the stick when it comes to publishing houses, all manner of other bits and pieces. I mean, as I said, this is the sort of thing that Murder, She Wrote's Jessica Fletcher would have given short shrift to, really, I would have thought.
There is still... I have conversations all the time with Annette about it, because she says, I don't understand, really don't understand, how there can be such a divide, such divisiveness, when men pursue women at all costs, to their careers, to their lives, to this and that, and then they can't wait to beat them up.
Yeah, well, it's these whack with respect. Obviously, we wouldn't endorse that thing. But this particular study, Universities of Illinois. I'm just giving the whole state a new name.
In Illinois, yeah, you're right.
Lord above. The Universities of Illinois and California at Berkeley, who actually used this algorithm to examine 104,000 works of fiction dating from 1780, so just before you were born, Arthur, to 2007. Yeah. So. And they found that actually... Over those two centuries, there's been a steady decline of female characters in literature. Not necessarily film and television, but in terms of literature, there's a steady decline. I mean, is this something you kind of were aware of, Arthur, or did it surprise you?
No, it does surprise me. But I wonder. You know, with studies like so many kind of things, if you start out with the idea that it's a very crowded field to get published with something. So if you start out with something, perhaps you can make the model fit what you thought of before you even started day one on it. It seems very surprising to me. It really does.
And in the world of contemporary televisional drama, where you're dealing with teams of writers putting material together, who knows what situations are developing. Although, I suppose, again, that's another issue. We have in the studio, in the case of Rory McGowan, Arthur, a journalism and creative writing undergraduate.
Well, there's a triple threat for you.
Exactly.
A male, a journalist.
Yeah. And a creative writer. And I'm sure...
And a creative writer.
I mean, not that we're implying that journalists...
I have to question something. Excuse me. I must question something. What is a creative writer as opposed to a non-creative writer?
Rory.
Well, a creative writer, I believe, is somebody who... likes in, I suppose. Actually, it's a really good question, because non-fiction can also be creative writing. It doesn't necessarily have to have...
But writing is creative. It can be bad writing, but it's still creative. Right. No, it's just I always wonder about... I used to teach in nighttime adult education courses, and... The people who came were truly interested in learning, because they after a day's of work or whatever, and they paid money to come at night and learn something. And what I found amazing, eye-opening, is that I have an undergraduate degree and I have a master's degree. I do not have a PhD. And when I saw the catalog that came out, I was listed as a PhD. I said, no, there's a mistake here. They said, no, we need this. This is UCLA, a world-famous organization. No, we need this, you see, because that attracts the audience, the PhD. These titles, I mean, the emptiness, but also the idea of putting the wool over someone's eyes who know nothing about what a PhD entails. 99% of it is flogging an idea that's already been done to death by 1700. You know, I just, but this is my ranting for the day. That's the end of that.
Arthur, if we serve any purpose in the global world of telecommunications whatsoever, it's to allow you to have a rant on a monthly basis, whether it's post-Thanksgiving, pre-Thanksgiving, whatever. It's a very important structure to work through from that. So, Rory, any questions you'd like to put to this genius who's responsible for the Addams Family, the Green Hornet, Wonder Woman, $6 Million Man, so many delight. We already mentioned Murder, She Wrote, etc. Honey West, take it away.
Well, I think it's quite apt to bring up Wonder Woman, given the concepts and ideas that we've been talking about earlier on the show.
When you were writing Galt's Brain, Arthur, sorry, Rory, but added, when you were writing Galt's Brain, which you were kind enough to send the original script over to me, did you sort of think, I want to make sure it's a gender-neutral brain?
No, I didn't think of that. I never thought, I thought somehow Galt was a man, yes.
But technically, it was just a disembodied brain.
But I like the idea. You know, it would, I think it would have been certainly more intriguing if it was a woman. You're absolutely right. That's a great question. Yeah. No, that was good.
Carry on, Rory.
Okay, so, yes, talking about Wonder Woman and the her character, Diana Prince. How well do you think you did in terms of the representation in Wonder Woman of a strong female character?
Or did you not give a damn, basically, Arthur? Was it a Clark Gable approach? You said, look, it's a
TV
script.
I didn't give a damn. I was a club fighter. I said, show me the ring, show me the guy, and I'll hit him, and that's it.
Exactly, which is an interesting aside, where at the same time it doesn't necessarily mean that it's less worthwhile as a result of it. Because, Ben, I think it's fair to say short shrift is the line that you would actually say, where you think, not another campaign, etc. Short shrift.
I don't mind all of them. They're not too bad. I think it's certainly interesting, but I don't think it's the fault of the audience whom choose the stories. It's more the people that present the stories to the audience. And if what sells is demonstrated in representation, whether that be negative, then I guess that's what people, you know, it's supply and demand. That's how these things work. And if that's where the money is, that's where people are going to target. But if obviously people want an audience, or the demand goes the opposite way, and they want something that fully represents the characters well, and then it will show for it, and it will show for it in sales and become popular.
You take the Addams Family, and to me, Cousin It surely is hermaphrodite. You know, balanced on every side. I mean, did we ever have a gender alignment thing for Cousin It, Arthur, in the Addams Family?
Somehow Cousin It was the sock puppet.
Yes,
you know,
well, exactly. Yeah. And Thing could arguably just been a hand. It was a thing. Morticia, I think, was right. But I know, Arthur, you've been, I think it's keen to actually say it, 98 seconds for the Wonder Woman theme. It's fair to say probably neither Ben nor Rory, even in an internet age where you can actually access all of the Linda Carter episodes online quite easily, will ever have actually encountered this. So, Arthur, are you ready for the Wonder Woman theme?
I am.
And surely, Arthur, there could never have been a better lyric than "With your satin tights, fighting for our rights, you're a wonder to behold."
I mean, you know, in listening to that, Alex, I haven't heard it in I don't know how many years. It suddenly sounds to me like a cruise ship production number.
And what's wrong with Love Boat? I mean, surely in its era, you know, right, classic. Right. It's the equivalent of Fantasy Island. Bus is deplane.
Right, deplane.
Herr Villechaise, who effectively Ben will probably know better as being Knick-Knack in The Man with the Golden Gun.
Oh, yes, Knick-Knack.
Exactly. Being a Bond aficionado, and quietly, slightly so. So there we are. That's
sad story with him, though, isn't it, in his real world?
Well, Herb and Vern Troyer as well. Both these people of slightly diminished, small people have had little challenges, but that's a different line entirely. Ben, have you got any questions you want to put to Arthur?
Yeah, Arthur. So obviously, I know Annette's busy on her tour. We'll catch up.
We're speaking to her tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.
Indeed,
bright and early.
Yeah. Is there anything on your side of the pond that you're doing right now? Any kind of projects, or is there anything you're doing this week?
I'm always doing, and I have a 100 or 1,000 in baseball terms percent in striking out. I have had. Since my dotage years, I have had more deals going that have turned
Arthur,
than I ever thought possible.
The solution is quite simple. No longer actually use the full name Arthur Weingarten. Simply become AK Weingarten. Or even AKA Weingarten, in which case it'll be a win-win situation, because they'll say, yeah, we use the initials. Sign up for.
That's right. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I just yesterday thought a project that had gone long enough so that it looked like it was going to happen got turned down. And when I said to them, well, why did it take so long for what seems to be a rather reasonable reason for not doing it? And they said, oh, we have a lot of them that we were looking to turn down.
Oh, that's nice.
That certainly is a positive attitude.
I mean, it is interesting, given your resume, given your CV, everything that you've actually done, but even then you still have challenges. But then it's nothing new within the industry. In a sense, you're only as good as your last multi-million-dollar hit.
Well, who knows? I mean, it really is. First of all, it's such a gamble to begin with. But the very act of doing is 90% of it. You know, I wake up every single morning and I say, gee, I beat the odds. This is it.
Exactly. Yeah. And, of course, Arthur, you must ensure that you let any prospective producers or co-producers actually know that you are a regular monthly contributor to the Midweek Drive. That surely will tip the balance.
Yes. Yeah. No.
It's a slightly nervous laugh there, Arthur.
I think
we need more positivity. You know, it's there. You just say, this is it.
Yes, Midweek Drive.
Something along the lines of saying, yes, I'll make sure that's part of the whole thing. So a regular contributor, otherwise. You can even say, you wouldn't want to turn this project down because you would disappoint the British listener.
There you go. And as you know, my affection for the British public is
unbounded.
No horizon.
Unbounded in every sense of the word. We're going to be talking.
You got it.
By the way, any thoughts on who's going to play Annette when you actually start selling the film rights to her autobiography?
Do you know? You just hit something. I don't know if there's a collective conscience going on, but she called me yesterday to say she was doing a BBC radio interview, and the person said, well, you know, I just finished reading your memoir, and it was a page-turner. I just absolutely loved it. He said, have you made any suggestions who will play you when they do the movie?
I would say Keira Knightley for the young Annette, Andre, and then maybe Meryl Streep as we actually move into the sort of funny thing happened to the forum system, which is just a thought. I'll run it past Annette in the morning. We'll see what actually happens there. Ben, would you like to put those last two questions to the awesome Arthur Weingarten, please?
Arthur, have you enjoyed your telephone link with us today on the show?
I've had a terrific time. All of you are wonderful. I've had a great time.
That's a pleasure having you as ever, and we'll be joining us again sometime in the near future.
I certainly will. I'm waiting for the call.
Wonderful.
In fact, I tell you what, Arthur, we'll get you in for our Christmas Carol special, maybe in a couple of weeks' time or so, which is December
4th. Oh, I like that.
Where in the studio, we'll probably have at least 30 carol singers, possibly even 45. I know,
it seems
difficult to believe and difficult to comprehend, but honestly, it can happen.
Yeah.
Round of applause for Arthur Weingarten, please. And here's Andy Williams.
Ah, thank you, thank you.
Almost there, we're almost there. How wonderful, wonderful our love will be for you, for me. We're almost there, where we tenderness, a dream come true for me, for you. Love has waited such a long time, now we're a kiss apart. Darling, this is the right time to let the kisses start. And soon we'll find our paradise, paradise so rare. Close your eyes, for we're almost
mellow music. And Andy Williams, almost there, we're almost there. Where, of course, is the question? In the studio, Rory McGowan and Ben Lewis, in a tap dancing studio somewhere in the north of England, Rachel Teat. How are you, Rachel?
Hiya, I'm good. I'm tip-tap-tapping with me times there.
So, Rachel, you kept this fairly quiet in the past. I mean, I hadn't even noticed it as a special skill set. Is this, you know, a voiceover person and tap dancing solo as well?
Indeed. Well, I was tap dancing when I was younger,
yes.
And then I saw an adult class, and I thought, shall I, shan't I? And then I decided to just brave it and go ahead, book it, and join in, and I absolutely love it. It's 45 minutes, but I've done my first term, and I'm going to move up to the intermediate class.
Pretty impressed with myself. I thought so, Rory. Exactly. An intermediate tap dancer. Ben, I mean, I know you've done workplace with the Red Arrows, but surely tap dancing is where your heart lies.
Yeah, I don't mind a bit of tap dancing.
Exactly. It's jazz hands.
It's quite an enjoyable sound, I think.
If you wave the hands, people don't notice that your feet aren't moving, really, or vice versa.
Yeah.
So I've been told.
When it's all in time, though, it's beautiful, and I love it, and I'm so, like, I've got a thing about rhythm. If ever I meet anyone new, and I think, oh, we might have a future together romantically, I have to make sure that they can clap in time. If not, we're out. Deal breaker.
I don't know how to take that, frankly. I mean, what can I say? It's extraordinary. So, never mind. Rachel Teat fans, take note. Very important. No rhythm.
So you heard
no
it
chance.
Here first on Siren Radio.
Exposed throughout the world. So you were last seen in Manchester, I believe, dealing with an actress who was very poorly, so you stepped in like the brave little soul you are to pick it up. So what were you doing?
I did. So I play a police officer in a short film and come and sort out a disturbance. And I can't tell you any more than that, unfortunately.
Of course. See,
it's all very last minute and all very much like, right, I'm on my way there. I don't know what the script is. I don't know what I've got to learn. Turning up and, but actually, because of that, you kind of don't have time to think or get yourself kind of worked up.
Flustered.
Think, oh, can I do this? Yeah. So you just fly by the seat of your pants, quite literally.
Rachel Teach, the woman for whom the word no doesn't exist, frankly. You know, it's bring it on. Bring it on with Rachel. In fact, really, Rachel, bring it on, Teach could be a little sort of name for that. In a kind of Kristen, I was going to say Kristen Stewart way. Could have said that. It's actually Kirsten Dunst. Kirsten Dunst, really. That's the sort of line from that.
Yes, well, we can talk about my cheerleading career as well. Well, I am a national champion cheerleader. Things you never knew.
Let me just dial that back again, because, you know, I mean, Ben is so shocked, he's actually almost dropped his phone there. We are speaking to a national cheerleading champion here.
Oh, it's, yeah. Let's cheer for that.
Give me an R, give me an A, give me a C, give me an H, give me an E, give me an L, give me a T-E-A-T-E. What do we got? Rachel Teat! Yay! Sorry, I should come in. Channeling my inner Muppets there. Did you notice that?
That is Rachel's future intro for every other time she appears on Siren.
No, I think I'll work on the delivery, but I'll bring out the pom-poms, because, I mean, clearly cheerleaders without pom-poms, different line entirely. And at the University of Lincoln, of course, home of Siren Radio, lots of very successful cheerleaders, actually.
Indeed, there was Lincoln Jets, I think they called themselves.
They were phenomenal. In fact, one of the Lincoln Jets is now actually in charge of the front of house at the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre. That would be Holly.
I did not know that. Fun fact of the day.
Exactly. Spreading those whole aspects in all sorts of ways. We're going to be speaking to Amy Parkinson about the Manchester For the Love of Sci-Fi event shortly. Rory, since you made that bond with Rachel and, of course, your voiceover test on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition last week. I know she's taking time to recover, but she's tap dancing her way right back into your heart. What sort of questions have you got for the wee lassie?
So, tap dancing seems like a very big step away from...
Not that wee, you know.
very big step away from voice acting. What kind of got you into tap dancing as a child?
I always wanted to do it. My mum and dad were never really quite bushy or anything like that, and I said, I want to go dancing. They took me to ballet, which was a big mistake, because that was too strict, and I got told off for talking, told off for making it up, and they thought, perhaps, tap dancing or different styles of modern dance might be better. So I did tap and jazz and modern, but you still had to do the ballet for the disciplines. I just had to be quiet for half an hour in that session, which is very difficult for me. So,
I did feel actually that Rachel was desperately holding back the pas de deux and the jeté when we first sort of connected at the studio, because I felt like she was ready for that giant leap, that jeté, and then it was all set there. But, maybe not. Or maybe that's just a fantasy, which I won't go into. Not at 6:15 on evening, or even 6:16 on Siren Radio. Ben, anything you'd like to add?
Well, tap dancing in general. I mean, have you? I don't know. Is that what really inspired you to do it? I mean, I know you said it was something you've always wanted to do, and you got into dancing. But is there anything that's kept you going since you've gone on from that from a younger age? What's kept you going for it?
I think it's just the love of performing and the love of kind of getting out there and doing something that is a little bit different. You know, it's really strange having gone back to it from being a child and now doing it as an adult. The things I remember when you say the steps, I just pick them up, which is amazing that my brain clicked in. And also, it's kind of that, I read a thing about how important your mental health it is, kind of going back and doing something you used to love. And so I read about all the benefits and I thought, right, I'm going back to tap dancing. And now the people in my class, I mean, the average age is probably about 55, 60, but everyone is so lovely and the teachers so fantastic that I'm going to really miss them when I move up to the next class.
Well, they'll always be there in some way, shape or form, even though obviously you can actually say, see you suckers, I'm better, I'm a league ahead of you. You know, and it's just a way for, you know, sometimes it's cruel to be kind. When you said steps there, I was all set to go 5, 6, 7, 8. Well, I thought, no, hold back on that. Rachel, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I've had a lovely telephonic link, and now I'm going to have to get back to my shuffle ball changes.
I'm sure she said she was going to get back to her shuffle bald changes there. Or was it shuffle bowl changes? Either one of those two things, it's a magical experience. And I take it you'll be back with us soon?
I will see you on Sunday.
Well, yeah, you said that last Thursday, basically. It didn't make happen. She was called to Manchester, you know, so who knows what. I'd say, hopefully, if we're spared, to use the Sarah Kennedy line, if we're spared, exactly, you know, we might be there. My rhythm might be all to pot. Who knows? Oh, 48 hours. 48 hours, less than that, almost. And For the Love of Sci-Fi will be happening. Isn't that right, Amy Parkinson?
Hi, Alex. How are you doing? You all right?
We're good. We've just been speaking to a tap dancer. So, obviously, after that, you think For the Love of Sci-Fi, just one darn thing after another. Are you excited, Amy? Is it going to be as awesome as we know it will be?
I'm so excited. I can't believe it. That, like, all the guests are arriving tomorrow. We've got 15 artists. We're dead excited. It's just been absolutely 12 months of planning just to come to this fantastic end. I can't wait for it all to start. It's dead exciting.
It will be fantastic, even though, tragically, we can't get there. I know. We're doing open days. We're doing food and gift fairs. Various.
I know.
It's happened. We'll be there in spirit, or gin, vodka, or other kind of alcoholic sort of beverages from that point of view, which obviously would be different, I tell you. Amy, are tickets still available for this fantastic event?
Yeah, tickets are still available. We're very, very close to selling out. Tickets are still available. We've got the opening concert on Friday night, and then we've got the convention Saturday and Sunday, which is open 9 till 5. They're close to selling out, though. And if you want tickets, they're on our website, fulloflovesci-fi.com.
Which is going to be, frankly, absolutely amazing. Ben, any thoughts from yourself? Again, this is an event which has got E.T., D. Wallace, you've got, so many. So just run through the highlights once again, please. Amy, I mean, I know there are too many.
No problem. So we've got Carl Weathers from Predator and Rocky. We've got Bridget Nielsen from Beverly Hills Cop 2 and Rocky 4. We've got Jesse Ventura from the Predator series. We've got Lou Ferrigno from The Incredible Hulk, the original Incredible Hulk.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
No, absolutely not. He's such a nice guy. We've got Gaten and Caleb, which is Dustin Lucas from Stranger Things. We're dead excited about them too. And Gaten will be playing with his band on Friday night, Work in Progress, which is a UK first exclusive. He's never, ever played in the UK before, so we're dead excited about
and
that.
And Ray Parker Jr. singing the theme to Ghostbusters.
Yeah, singing the original theme to Ghostbusters. We can't wait on the same night. So that's just before Gaten comes on at 6 o'clock. We're dead excited about that. We've also got Spencer Wilding from Rogue One. And we've got the three ET cast, which is a 36-year reunion. Mm. They're all going to be in Manchester. Henry Thomas, Dee Wallace and Robert McNaughton, which is the two boys and the mum from the ET Spielberg classic Oscar-winning film.
And let's not forget, in the case of Dee Wallace, The Howling as well.
Absolutely. We're so excited.
And you'll be pleased to know that Ben and myself, rather than actually sharing this awesome event, we'll be at an open day at the wonderful University of Lincoln, promoting the joys of communications and public relations.
Of course, and naturally we'll only have two people there for the day, but...
if you're listening to this, if you fancy coming along to an open day, feel free to do so. We'd be more than happy to welcome you on that.
We like company.
Exactly. We might not be as entertaining as the cast from Stranger Things.
We might look miserable as well. But,
No.
It's fine. There'll be loads of videos and photos online.
Exactly. You can experience it in a kind of Baudrillard postmodern way. Indeed. And actually sort of see it on that basis alone. Rory, any quick questions?
So, are you feeling the nerves? I think is the question that I've got to
Amy's
ask.
Amy's fearless. It's like Andrew and Amy, they are rock star, like ice, basically. They're ice people. It's like Ice Baby could have been written for the love of sci-fi team.
I mean, obviously, everybody's got apprehension and nerves, and obviously, like, all this planning, like, Andy, which is the owner of Monopoly Events, has worked so hard, tirelessly, night and day, like, really, really, like, 18, 19 hours a week to pull this off, and it's just been 12 months solid of hard work. So, yeah, of course you get apprehensive because so much is on the line. But all the flights are booked now. They're all coming over from all different parts of the world. They're all arriving on Friday. So, yeah, I think, it doesn't matter how small or big a convention is. Whenever you're putting on a show like that, yeah, there's always a bit of apprehension. You know, we're people at the end of the day, you know, booking Hollywood movie stars, and we're big fans as well, so...
But remember, Amy, they are very fortunate to be blessed by your good self and Andy, and for the love of sci-fi. So it's a win-win situation. You know, we're all in this planet together, working through that. And Amy, we need to obviously ask you the question: will you come back and talk to us again in the very near future as a postscript to "For the Love of Sci-Fi"?
Alex, honestly, I love speaking on Lincoln Radio. Thank you so much. Really, really appreciate the opportunity, and we love speaking to your listeners. So yeah, thank you. I'd love to come back.
Well, this is great because one of the things I'm looking to do is hopefully in the new year, in January, we might well actually take an automobile and actually drive over to Manchester. I know, exactly. You know, we'll travel over there across the M62 and maybe actually talk with yourself and Andy and reciprocate, because obviously you can also come to Lincoln as well. So we'll look to get that sorted out in 2019.
It's just
amazing. So that sorted that out then. Apart from the fact that I do need to reveal that in the very near future, probably 7 days from now, I will be playing excerpts from William Shatner's first ever Christmas album.
Oh!
Yes, he has actually produced a Christmas album, which I have on good authority he was inspired to do by being up for the Love of Sci-Fi last year in 2018.
Wow, yeah, I know. Gave me an exclusive there. I didn't even know that.
Well, you may still need to check your sources on that. I might be sort of over-enthusing about that whole system. I can only reason that that's the reason he would have been inspired to do it. But you know, I'm not saying it's. I wouldn't go. Don't go public with that yet. Don't press the tweet button until you know we've
that's
actually
all
clarified
right.
that.
That's but it's, all right. It's, we loved having William Shatner at our event last year. Really cool guy. We his cues were out of this. I've never seen a person with so many people wanting to see him. Absolutely amazing.
Amy, he's TJ Hooker. I mean, what more could you ask for?
Absolutely. Oh, I know.
I mean, he is TJ Hooker, and he's also Denny, and he's William Shatner, you know? Captain Kirk in Manchester. Sorry.
I know. He's a fantastic guy.
I know. Rory, you've never seen an episode. You should. Your world will be changed. Likewise, Ben. Anyway, we've asked the two questions. We're off now. We're moving into one of Ben's little favourites. Actually, it's not Ben. It's Rory, who actually specifically was keen for this. Amy, what do you think about the band called Steps?
They're great. 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, they're a great band. See, yeah, they're coming back, aren't they? It's a reunion tour, isn't it?
And maybe we can squeeze them into For the Love of Sci-Fi, you know, because they have done a sci-fi themed video, at least one of their sort of situations, but it's just great. Anyway, Amy, your last little task before we leave you to get back on with the fantastic For the Love of Sci-Fi event.
No problem. Lovely speaking to you and the team and the listeners. Thank you so much, everyone, for your support.
And
it means a lot to us. Thank you.
Wearing your media presenter hat, would you like to introduce the aforementioned Steps with 5, 6, 7, 8. Over to you, Amy.
And it's going to be steps with 5, 6, 7, 8. Thanks, guys.
It's time to begin. I'm counting in. 5, 6, 7, 8.
My boot scooting baby is driving me crazy. My obsession from a western. My dance floor date. My rodeo Romeo. A cowboy got some head to toe. Wanna make you mine, better get in line.
Teenager effectively started as a phenomenon thanks to the Americans of the 1950s and the 20th century, and that the generation gap was something which emerged in the 1960s and so on and so forth. Well, it would seem that when it comes to gaps between the generations, maybe, just maybe, things are getting a little bit better, with recent research from Stannis Stairlifts revealing that actually 6 in 10 of those surveyed in the youngster age range would seem to be keen to spend more time getting to know their elders, which obviously, as a chronologically gifted academic, is good news from that point of view. To actually talk to us about this particular survey and more, a true genuine legend who actually dealt more than capably with the awesome Magnus Pike back in the day, it's of course Doctor and TV presenter extraordinaire Miriam Stoppard. How are you, Miriam?
I'm fine. How are you?
Very good indeed, and all set to continue progressing all sorts of things. But this is an interesting thing that of the 2,000 over 65s that were actually asked in this survey, 1 in 10 said they feel they're viewed as slow or elderly, and a fifth of those also believe that young people wouldn't want to speak with them or even communicate with them.
Yeah, I mean, that's very sad. And in fact, it's the opposite of what we found in this survey. Because the younger generation don't think of the older generation in that way. So I think the older generation are selling themselves a bit short. After all, you know, quite a proportion of the older generation is still at work, which it wasn't in the 1960s. They're still active. They're still taking life at full tilt. You know, they want to be participants rather than observers. And I think this survey would suggest that the old stereotypes, you know, oldies, wrinklies, are really quite out of date. And what's more, it's not the younger generation that are perpetuating those stereotypes. As you said, the survey showed that the younger generation think that older people are wise and interesting and experienced and inspiring and knowledgeable, and they want to talk more to them, and they want to meet them more often. So that's all very good. I think it will go quite a long way to reversing those stereotypes.
Of course, culturally, we've had situations whereby in certain cultures, the notion of the ancient revered guru was always held up as being a very important side of things. And then, of course, you've always got the Eskimos, who apparently, more chronologically gifted folk, would just go out into the snow waste and continue on that basis. But is it a kind of Western culture that we have gone through this process? I mentioned, you know, partially tongue-in-cheek of how you had to cope with the locust-eating Magnus Pike and so on, who was quite a character back in the day, and that kind of which is me, obviously, in a particular generation. But from that perspective, is this something which kind of comes with fashion, or is it embedded into our culture as well?
Well, I think it is cultural, and I think it is a hangover, but it's time we threw it out. I think that, you know, our in our survey, the younger generation actually found the older generation very interesting to talk to when they got down to it. They love the fact that the older generation can tell stories about, you know, what life was like when they were younger. And as the grandmother of 12 grandchildren, I have found myself telling stories about when I was at school and the mischief I got up to. And the younger generation love to hear those stories. And, of course, at the moment, we're talking about the end of the First World War. Many of the older generation, you know, passed on stories about their experiences then, and the younger generation actually do like to hear about that. So I think, you know, we can make an effort to reverse these stereotypes in a couple of ways. I just wish the media wouldn't use these, you know, these descriptors of being silver surfers and wrinklies and oldies, and started to think about them as very useful members of society, and that we can also do a lot within families and within the workplace. I mean, older, experienced people are being welcomed in the workplace because they're so useful and have so much experience. And I think within families, the younger generation can take a bit more trouble to keep the older generation feeling that they're included and engaged.
Well, Miriam, I often said we should actually ban the O word completely and just actually refer to either being chronologically gifted or experientially enhanced.
that's good.
Well, but again, taking that sort of stage further, you're quite right in terms of stereotypes, because ultimately stereotypes can be seen as a form of lazy journalism, which then leads to, before we realise it, almost kind of getting into the ism and ageism and creeps into play. And maybe we just need to start thinking of people, despite the number of years or decades we've actually spent on the planet, as basically being human beings first and foremost, and take it from there.
Well, yes, and look for the good points. I mean, there are so many good things, as I know myself, as I'm getting older, there are so many good things about getting older. You know, one does, and actually the younger generation appreciates that. We don't worry about the rule book as much as we used to. We are prepared to say what we think without kind of editing it. And this makes us quite interesting people. So I'm waving the flag for the over 65s, because I think they still have a lot to give. And the younger generation, because of this Stana survey, seems to be coming round to that point of view. So long may it persist.
Indeed so. Although it might be pointed out, I'm sure, by at least one of our listeners, that there's a slightly chronologically gifted soul currently occupying the White House who might need to actually sort of engage his mind a little bit more before he actually opens his line. But we won't go there, because it's a different line entirely. Miriam, it's been awesome sharing some thoughts with yourself today. Presumably Stana.com is the best place to go to online to find out more details about what we've spoken about?
stanastairlifts.co.uk.
stanastairlifts.co.uk. And we've got two final questions for you. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
Oh, yes, indeed. I've loved it.
Well, then, the next critical question, Miriam, is will you be kind enough to join us again in the not-too-distant future and keep us appraised of life, the universe and more things?
Of course I will. Just ask.
Dr. Miriam Stoppard, many thanks indeed. Take care now. Yes, we like to feel we're an ageism-free zone as far as the Midweek Drive is concerned, even when you have to celebrate people turning into their sixth decade of existence. But clearly, we will inevitably, slightly belatedly, because obviously we didn't match the actual turn of Phil Leonis from the 40s to the 50s, we will actually sort of say, happy birthday, Phil Leonis. So after three gentlemen, happy birthday, Phil Leonis.
Oh, now, you know, this was the perfect opportunity to say many happy returns because I missed last week's show, so you could have had the double meaning.
Is it
happy
Thanksgiving?
I saved that for my little brief pithy few words on Facebook to accompany other sort of scenarios there, and also the fact that I can finally say that on November the 26th, 2018, finally, after me being quite concerned over what was going to happen with this, and especially when one of the co-hosts of Chilpack Hollywood Hour is indeed a graphic artist, finally there was a nod in the direction of Stan Lee's celebrity death, because it has been a year in which not only the great Stan Lee has gone, but Carlos Esquerra has actually gone, Steve Ditko has actually gone, Russ Heath has actually gone, Marie Severin, one of the prime female artists from the whole Marvel era and not Brand Echt, also went from that point of view, and I thought, are they ever going to be commented on this in celebrity deaths? But thankfully, together with Ilana Rain and
what's his name, out of sight, out of mind, yeah, but you know, that's the thing, is that old what's his name, I'm betting, because we're going on what, a decade of his long promised graphic novel we're waiting on.
This is
so
true.
I'm betting that any topic like this just hits too close to home, and that's why he veers away from it. But no, we gave a wide ranging analysis to Stan Lee's death. We made you wait a week, but only so that we could give it sufficient time, I think. Mm. But that was.
And you had our mutual friend and colleague Ilana Rain back on Chilpack Hollywood. So, in other words, Ilana.
Yeah, that was great fun getting to talk about her first movie. Yeah. Her first narrative feature, Perception, that was great fun. But so many things that Ilana and I talked about that didn't even make the cut on that episode pertaining to our Southern California fires and, just making sense of a world gone wild, as we do.
And not Danny Wild, of course. But without me actually using the line with Dean Haglund, which of course you could always use at your leisure, Phil, as a physician you should be aware of the dangers of opening up old wounds. Reopening up old wounds. Wrath of Khan, by the way, Rory, if you ever get around to watching it. It's been an all male show.
And by the way, as an old Prisoner fan, I'm still disappointed that you have yet on one of my birthdays to post, may the sun shine on you today and every day. Which is how they wish happy birthdays in the village.
Of course.
So, touche.
I'm saving
your Wrath of Khan, and I raise you the prisoner.
Whoa, I'll take that raise, and I'll offer you Klaatu Barada Nikto, as used with my science fiction film students this very Tuesday.
Oh, and that sound that everyone is hearing right now, or people switching to other radio stations?
Honestly, sometimes, Phil, you're such a card. As we say, it is an all-male lineup because Eva MacDonald left us after 45 minutes. I think she'd had enough. Obviously, she's sorting out her buns, which is fine, hairstyles, etc. You can see the photographs.
I was going to say thank you for the clarification, Alex.
Hard to believe she didn't want to stick around for two sci-fi nerds swapping obscure quotes.
I know, Phil. Honestly, you know, sometimes I wonder about, you know, the next generation.
Take priority, entertaining you know.
You clearly. Keira Osbrook is a bit poorly. I think she should be a bit poorly. Anyway, get well soon, Kira. And Bethany Gulliver is doing dissertation work. So, as I say, you have Rory McGowan, who I didn't even think was going to be here until he actually said, so I'll see you at 5 then. I said, I think I'm actually on for tomorrow. But he sent me both schedules. Come along, I said, Rory, thinking he might have difficulty. But no, he's...
And here I am.
Exactly so. It's very good.
I never leave.
Well, Ben used to say the same, and look what's happened to his career. Stratospheric, quite literally. Stratospheric.
Indeed.
But Rory had a question for you, not that I'm putting words into his mouth, Phil, about the Los Angeles Breakfast Club. Was that not right, Rory?
Is that right, Alex?
I don't know, Rory.
I've got to ask.
What would you like to ask for Linus?
I honestly don't remember what question I was thinking about, Alex, but there's plenty of questions, I'm sure, for Phil.
Well, on Sunday, he was doing a fantastic fundraiser for the Los Angeles Breakfast Club. You actually said, "What's the Los Angeles Breakfast Club?" I said, "You ask him, Rory." It was about 10 minutes ago, and I can appreciate the difficulty.
Yes,
is it all fitting
together? Incredibly sorry, yes.
Whoa.
Phil, here we go. After that complete and utter shamble, tell us more about the Los Angeles Breakfast Club.
In 1925, a group of equestrians would gather around an open fire pit, literally where I am sitting inside my car right now, and would enjoy in the pre-dawn hours good fellowship and good breakfast. And it became such a regular thing for these riders, many of whom either were or would go on to become world-renowned names in their fields, be it industry, politics, entertainment. And they decided then and there to form a club that they would call the Los Angeles Breakfast Club. And it's the first breakfast club anywhere in the world. And it has been continually in existence for 93 years. It now operates out of Friendship Auditorium on the original site of those original equestrian members. And our current clubhouse, Friendship Auditorium, was built in 1962. By the Breakfast Club, given to the city of Los Angeles. We lease it back for our meetings, and it's the single largest source of revenue for our parks department in Los Angeles. And I 2 years ago hosted a show that was kind of a tribute to the days of yore when the Los Angeles Breakfast Club was the longest running radio program, because the meetings would be broadcast live over the radio across the nation. And at one point it was the longest running radio show in American history. And so I put on a show 2 years ago that was kind of a tribute to those days of yore. And it was such a success, especially as a fundraiser for the club, that I was asked to put on another one last year. And I said no. Because I needed a year off, but also I needed to find a theme that was suitable, that sparked my imagination. And this year, when I saw the available dates, I knew immediately what the theme should be, because the other night, I literally turned 50 years of age while on stage, and so what better way to say goodbye 40s and hello 50s than with a show set during the final hour of 1949. It was a New Year's Eve show, 1949. All the jokes, all the sketches, all the acts were vintage appropriate. My entire monologue was written out of Bob Hope and Jack Benny jokes and Red Skelton jokes. And it raised a lot of money for the club, and we had a packed house. And it was great fun. It was kind of a dream come true, a great way to spend my birthday.
And Ben and Rory are currently perusing the Facebook images.
We are indeed.
Although Phil's more of an Instagram fan, I think it's fair to say. Really.
And so in addition to a club of fellowship, it is also, we have a charitable foundation that was well endowed by members of the past. And just now, when Alex called, I was in the finishing touches of giving away $8,000 in grants to local organizations. So that's one of the things we do. We give out several dozen grants each year.
I think that deserves a round of applause.
Very good. Yeah, I know. CSR.
Even though it took a long time for us to actually get Rory into the mood to actually ask the question.
Yes,
I'm
sorry, Alex. I do apologize.
Don't apologize. It's always nice to have a production meeting live on air. At least Rory, as Ben will attest to.
Rory sensed that rule number one of the Breakfast Club is you don't talk about the Breakfast Club.
See what you did there.
However, I do want to confirm, it's not related to the chain of breakfast restaurants around London and Oxford that
nice
is called
call,
the
Ben.
Breakfast Club.
Nice call.
Do you know what I'm aware of?
In fact, I believe I have audio of the founder of those restaurants appearing at the Los Angeles Breakfast Club. And speaking about that, as a matter of fact.
Very interesting. Mm. And not related at all to the film
the Breakfast Club either.
Don't you forget about me.
When people make that joke, I tell them to just walk on by.
Oh, it's like Molly Ringwald could be in the studio, really. And that's, you know, when the Brat Pack have come alive. We'll be into St. Elmo's Fire and other 80s classics before Ben or Rory were even anything more than just images in the cosmos. Anyway, quite outstanding, as I was saying.
The good news is after 93 years in existence, I am fairly confident that the Los Angeles Breakfast Club will outlast all John Hughes movies. So that's the beautiful thing.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. The Lady Killers, of course, continues to go from strength to strength. It will be receiving an international release, I'm sure, shortly. That'll be a matter of course. And I gather it's gone down particularly well with lynching fans in America, really. But that's another line entirely. Best I can go.
Oh, my God. You mean Lynchian? I hope you mean Lynchian fans. David Lynch.
Yeah,
that's what you mean. Because otherwise, hashtag too soon.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
But, you know, since we spoke, we had a big screening in the San Francisco Bay Area. The film is available on DVD and on a wide variety of on-demand platforms, but we had a theatrical event in the San Francisco Bay Area, which was astounding because I was raised up there, and oh my God, it was post-apocalyptic. I've never been anywhere in the world where air quality was that bad. Lily Holloman asked me, is this fog? And I said, yes, this is fog. This is mesquite-flavored fog because of all the Northern California fires. It was astounding, but it continues to divide and delight and disturb audiences, and I can't wait to get to share it with the UK at some point, hopefully in 2019.
Well, life on the road can be a lonely place for Great Britain's professional drivers, with the average driver spending over 17 hours completely alone. Tomorrow morning at around about 8:30, 12:30, or half past midnight in Los Angeles time, we'll be speaking to Paul's animal assisted therapy, who actually say, if you're worried about driving alone, take a pet along with you. Because if you have man's best friend, you'll have your spirits raised, and indeed one in five of those surveyed say that their dogs have had a direct positive impact on their mental health, according to research by Mercedes-Benz. That's worth getting up early for, isn't it, Ben?
It certainly is.
Isn't it, Rory?
I mean, that's brilliant, but it doesn't awfully seem a bit dangerous. I don't know.
Well, as long as you don't let the dog get behind the wheel.
Well, yeah. But like, just as a distraction. I don't know. I've never owned any pets, so...
Really?
No, I have not, Alex.
Do they not allow you in Milton Keynes? Bedfordshire? Is it Milton Keynes or is it Bedfordshire?
No, it's because my mum hates cats. No, my mum hates dogs. And my dad hates cats because he's allergic.
Wow.
And so there was always the dispute and it never happened. So,
wow.
Oh,
well,
sorry to end the...
How do they feel about you is really the question. I mean, that's...
Well, I suppose I was the compromise then, Phil, wasn't I?
Compromise, exactly. That's good for you.
We can't have a cat, we can't have a dog. Let's have a small human.
What about fish? I mean, they could have had a fish, couldn't they? They're usually quite low maintenance.
Oh, I don't know.
But cats, driving companions, cats are excellent driving companions.
Oh,
I'm sure. Because they can nap on the dashboard, but my cat, Fuzz Aldrin, prefers to just sit proudly on my shoulder the whole drive while I'm driving.
That's so lovely.
I would have thought there's got to be some bylaw against that somewhere in some state of America. Where you say, I'm sorry, sir, you're driving with a feline on your shoulder. We need to ticket you straight away.
But I pretend that she's a parrot, and she goes well with my eye patch, and then I can pretend my Kia Soul is actually a pirate vessel. It's just fantastic.
I wasn't going to lie, Phil. I was thinking exactly the same thing when you said cat on the shoulder, being a driving pirate.
It's the way she actually purrs, pieces of eight, pieces of eight. You'd have to squeeze the mouth somewhat to actually get that sort of, but who knows what could actually happen. Phil,
that's
clearly
the
haven't...
most disturbing part of any episode I've ever been on,
really?
Of this show, was what you just did. Yeah, that was really...
Yeah, well, you
really
say...
creeped me out for
it's,
some reason.
We're approaching the 9th year of our podcast package from that point of view, and indeed the 29th year of various other bits and pieces, so, you know, just carry on. Phil, as you haven't heard the show because you were doing crazy things like being in meetings and various other bits and pieces, you will have missed out on author and gender equality campaigner C.A. Asprey, William Coles, Anna Lewis, Miriam Stoppard, you call it Hanged End of Miriam Stoppard, etc., Arthur Weingarten, of course, and For the Love of Sci-Fi. But I guess you can actually ask Rory and Ben, who've been here for the full hour and 52 minutes, what highlights they've actually had, and maybe something we used to do back in the early days, back in the start of the teenies, we used to actually say, so what have you learnt? What have you learnt from the Midweek Drive today? Over to you.
Yes. Yes. What have you learned? What did you learn from Arthur Weingarten? That's what I want to know.
That he's been rejecting a lot of things lately.
No, he has been rejected
yes.
by...
Oh, he has, rejected. The other yes. way around, my he, bad. So I didn't even learn that properly. What can I do right, honestly?
As he said, he wakes up, he expects to get another rejection through the post. It's outrageous.
He has very thick skin, and he needs to be.
And yet, are they wrong? Are they wrong? Because we, you know, we get back what we put out into the world. So if he's getting rejections, I would argue that you're right. He is rejecting too many things. That's the thing. We want to point the finger back at ourselves and say, well, if we're upset about being rejected, who are we rejecting that we ought to reappraise?
As within, so without.
Nice. Nice.
When you can actually grab the pebble from my hand, then it would be time for you to leave. I did suggest a few years ago, Phil, that maybe for graduates to actually shorten the whole experience, we could actually have them try and walk across sandpaper without leaving any imprint whatsoever. And then when they graduate, they could actually burn a dragon into their forearms, etc. But strangely, that's never gone down well in the higher educational circles. I don't know why.
Yeah, not in a new university. I mean...
Yeah, traditional.
Newish.
20 years. Yeah.
Makes me feel old if you say it's not a new university.
I mean, that's not appropriate in a new university like that. I mean, if Lincoln had taken up the offer to be the second university all those hundreds of years ago, well then, I mean, I would think that what the rituals you just described would be what we call Tuesday. But instead, they're inappropriate. They're inappropriate. I mean, you've got elevators that talk, apparently. So that kind of ancient...
It is exciting. When they work, of course. Yeah. Sometimes it's very difficult when you find...
It's company in the lift. A bit like when you have your cat when you're driving. You know, it's company. Yeah. It's company.
all this and an on-location report with Royal Radio coming from the Lincoln Food and Gift Fair at the Lincoln Agricultural Society. Do you know, it's reached the time where we have to say happy trails to Phil again. I doubt whether he'll be joining us in the morning. He might. I mean, just past midnight. We kind of waited last week when he promised us faithfully on his email, I'll be there bright and early. No, nothing came through. Yeah.
I forgot what time it was.
Exactly.
You know, I had a partner that was sick, and then I went and checked my phone, and it was middle of the night. Well, I'd missed you, but that's all right.
So, Ben, go for it, please. The last two questions.
Phil, have you enjoyed your time for a litmus today on the show?
It's been okay.
Okay. Do you fancy joining us again at some point, or?
Yeah, why not?
Wonderful. We look forward to having you again soon.
I love, Ben, the or with the ellipsis Wednesday. There.
We will actually give a round of applause to Rory because he's managed to get through the whole show without talking over microphones around the room, which is fantastic. So well done, Rory.
Thank you. You've become aware.
Exactly. Cosmically aware.
First scout badge of the radio done.
It's done, does a big tick on that basis. In the morning, we've got the return of William Sitwell. We've got Annette Andre live at 9 o'clock telling us about how her tour is actually going and how she was working with Shane Rimmer recently. We've got Ian Lennox briefly. We've got Richard Fitzwilliams discussing the latest Coen Brothers movie. It is awesome. Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Really enjoyed that. Absolutely ace. So that's happening. And we've got Gabriella Peralta live from Gibraltar. All magical things to come through. Has it been okay for you, Rory?
Oh, yes, it's been great.
Back tomorrow morning?
Oh, I will be. Yes.
Ben?
No doubt.
I'm surprised you even had to question that. Yeah, you know. After however many years I've been doing it.
But the thing is, you see, Ben, I mean, I've had like another 2 hours of Nick Elliott shows to do today.
That's very true. I'll give you that.
Whoa. I mean, you came into the studio, you saw the kind of detritus which some of the co-presenters have left.
Honestly.
No names.
There's still stuff here. But
just,
they like to leave their mark. Let's put it that way.
They're musicians and entertainers sometimes. Do you know where we're going on that one? Anyway, we've cleared that up. Thank the Lord. Without calling for CSI or anything else on that point.
Well, Phil, join us in the morning, perhaps?
Throw those last two questions to him.
I've already done one
you
of
have,
them.
Haven't you?
And I've already done the other. Well, yeah, would you like to join us again in the morning, Phil? I say our morning is kind of your night/morning there, really, I guess.
He's not going to have many more left to do before he ceases being a bachelor, of course, only another 2 months' worth. And then you stop being a bachelor.
I mean, I am intrigued to discuss Ballad of Buster Scruggs with Richard Fitzwilliam. I mean, that's going to be great fun. And no, I won't be joining you.
No. That's the
can record a voice message for him.
We'll do. Phil Leonis, we salute you. Next week, we've got a scooter man on who you have spoken to before because you have a shared love of Paul Weller and various other factors. His name, of course, is?
It's Dave Walker.
Dave Walker back with us, plus a whole heap of other goodies. We'll speak to you then. Phil Leonis.
Thank you.
And what would you like us to go out with, apart from Neil Diamond and Mr. Bojangles, which is going to take us up to the news? Shall we all say happy 50th birthday, Phil? 1, 2, 3.
Happy 50th
birthday, Phil!
Middleman of sale in New Orleans, he was down and out. He looked to me to be the eyes of age. As he spoke right out, he talked of life, he talked of life. He laughed, slapped his leg a step. Mr. Boy.